Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back. And now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact. Hey everyone, welcome back. So today I have with me Brian Reeves. Brian and I have been in the same circles doing this work in sort of separate and similar orbits for the last decade. I'm really glad that he and I got to sit down and have this conversation today. Brian is a former U.S. Air Force captain, and he is now an internationally renowned author and life and relationship coach with a current focus on supporting men to have better lives and relationships. His viral blog has been read by over 50 million people in every country on the planet except North Korea. He is the co-founder of Elevate Your Relationship, a live coaching program for men ready to elevate their relationship game, which currently serves men in 10 countries. He's the co-host of the popular podcast Men This Way. And his book, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, is available on Audible, Amazon, and other retailers. I adore Brian. I think the work that he is doing in the world is so incredibly important. Please listen up. Listen to what's possible in the world of relationships and the way Brian describes his work. All the things that are possible. It's truly, truly magnificent. So without further ado, here is my interview with Brian Reeves. Brian, thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, Kate. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited that we get to have this conversation. You and I have been in each other's circles and orbits for probably at least 10 years. Since the beginning of time.
That's right. Yep, in a minute.
Yeah, so I'm excited that we get to talk about your book and your work. One of the things I want to be conscious of as we create this conversation is that my audience is mostly women. So much of what you write about and your work is you work with couples, you work with everybody, but this is a message we all want men to hear. Actually, let me ask you this. How much of your work is consumed by women who want men to hear it? And how much of it is actually consumed by men who want to hear it?
My audience historically has been about 80% women, 20% men. So I've been writing about relationships and talking about relationships, and most men come to relationship work when they realize they have no choice versus because it's something they really enjoy and want to optimize in their lives. And that's certainly a tragedy, I'd say, no doubt. But I will say this, Terry Real, the psychologist Terry Real, he pointed out, at least to my mind, that the original wound for men in our culture is disconnection. We're taught to disconnect early as boys, really, from our bodies, our emotions, our feelings. And for women, the original wound is disempowerment. And so I think through my work, I'm actually doing two things. I'm taking on both of those. I think a lot of it actually started out as empowering women. I have three sisters. I got two moms married to my dad and my stepdad. And like, I had a sense of, I don't know, activism from a young age of realizing that, wow, women are not really well cared for in this world. And they should be in more positions of authority and leadership, and they're just not. And so I think from a young age, I took on a task of activism on behalf of women. And that it so happened to show up through my work in relationships. And when I started to really dive into that in my mid-30s, that one of the reasons I think women are drawn to my work from a, in a relationship context is because I hope anyway that for the most part, my work feels empowering to women in mm-hmm. a relationship context.
Yes. Yes.
Would you, you're a woman, obviously.
what would you that say? That I am. No, I actually agree with you. I agree with you entirely. I think your work is empowering to women. I think from the perspective of this is what's possible in men, right? And let's hold our men to a higher standard and account, not in a badgering, demeaning, nagging way, which you actually talk about in your book too, like never amounted to like anything. But let's call them into something, to this connection that we, as you said, is the original wound for men. We've taught them that you do talk about in one of the early chapters about being a man. Like, what is it to be a man? And most men have zero roadmap.
That's right.
Right? There's no guidance.
No mentoring.
In that.
Yep.
Right. Yes. So let's talk about that. I'm interested in obviously your story and how you got here, because you came to this from what one would look at as like a real manly, like a military career into this sort of like heart-centered work that you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because I went through the military, I went through a kind of an exacerbation of what most men experience just culturally. The military poured millions of dollars into finishing me off from a disconnection perspective, disconnecting me from my body. It's like culture, society did a fine job of that as a young boy, then a teenager, and the military just picked up where society left off and just completed the, what do you call it, dissection of my head from my body. There at 26 years old, I get spat out of the military. I leapt out because I could just feel death in my body. I did not feel alive at all. I felt dead. I felt dead inside. Couldn't feel anything. I'm 26 years old. I'm on one level, I'm full of, as they say, piss and vinegar, ready to take on the world. But the military used all that, all up what I had and put it towards something that I personally at the time just couldn't get excited about. It just wasn't what I felt like I was brought here to do, but that's what I did for 10 years. And yeah, and from that place, then I tried to do intimate relationships with women, and it was just one disaster after the next. And that disconnection, a lot of what I talk about in all of my work, certainly in my book, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, but through all my work is connection. I think that's at the core of my work. Whether I'm working with couples or working these days, that's not true. I am doing some private coaching with women, but predominantly it's couples and men in groups even. Bringing men together in group work is profound.
Yes. Yes. You talk about that in the book. You had this, it's just like an incredible description. Maybe you can recreate it for us of the men transforming their rage into pain.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing. Men don't generally, there's not a lot of emotions we are allowed to feel culturally. Anger is a go-to emotion because it's powerful. It gives us power, at least the perception of power. Of course, except for the sports field, there we can feel all the emotions. We're allowed to cry. We're allowed to be upset. We're allowed to be ecstatic on the sports field. That's it, though. Once we're off the field, you man up, bury those feelings. And rage, anger is one that I think is a go-to for men, as I said, because it conveys a sense of power, an experience of power. Now, most of us are shamed for being angry because we don't really know how to use anger in constructive ways. We've never seen anger used in constructive ways. We've only seen it used really destructively and to tear things down and to cause damage. And we experience anger as this overwhelming force. There's so many layers of this, but talk about being overwhelmed by the feminine, anger, emotions. When we get overwhelmed by that, we can't control it. We can't, and we use it destructively, which is what most of us only know how to do. again, the shame or the guilt that gets piled on top, it's just it's a shit show. But all the same, anger is the first go-to. It's the eruption of that feeling of powerlessness that most men are experiencing. And so in a moment of, I can't take it anymore, I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do about it. I feel trapped by life, by relationship, by my job, by my lack of money, by the government, whatever story, whatever we think we're being trapped by. So what I like to do with men is to help them express that anger in what I call constructive. I'm emphasizing con just as a constructive as opposed to destructive, right? Constructive ways that actually serve to animate our bodies, to bring life back into our bodies, but to do so in safe ways. And I'll do this with groups of men. I think in the book, I talked about a retreat that I was leading for a group of men when all of a sudden anger entered the room. And I wasn't planning on doing this exercise, but yeah, a couple men started to get a little snippy with each other. And I realized like the temptation is to try to solve it at the level of what are we arguing about? Let's figure that out and let's take it on. And not that doesn't have its place, but I realized at least in that moment, we were in nature, we were in a place where nobody could hear us or see us or experience. So we were in a safe container. We were in a trustable container. Nature is a profound container for deep personal inner growth work. And confronting shadow, it has the legacy of the vision quests in indigenous cultures, going out to nature to be held. And anyway, so I took these men out into the woods and we did anger work, not with each other, but solo. And I gave them certain instructions and again, to create a safe container so that these men can feel safe to let go. And knowing, see, most men are disconnected. Oh, we have such a tricky relationship with our anger. We're so scared of it. And to some degree, I think it's healthy to be frightened of our own anger because it can be very destructive. But most of us were either expressing destructive anger externally or we're swallowing it and imploding and it's shoving it down and it's doing whatever its nastiness is on the inside. And it just, none of that serves. It doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve society. It doesn't serve women. It doesn't serve our children. I could keep talking about that, but I'll pause there.
But you had them express it, right? Yeah. When you did this exercise with them until it transformed.
Yeah.
Right? The thing that's so beautiful.
So I have them, we work with anger. And then what often will happen is you'll see at the end is just men bawling, right? Because underneath the anger is so much sadness, so much grief, so much, like when men just confront. And I don't care. Look, I know as a white man, there is legitimately a privilege that I have as a white man born in the United States. No doubt about it. And you know what? It's still fucking hard being a man in the world. I don't care what color skin you have. There are pressures and there are challenges and there are futilities. There are all kinds of ways in which we feel powerless in domains in which we really wish we could exert power and have power and know how to use our power and again, constructive ways. But again, we don't feel safe. It's not really created. There's no safe places for us. I have this dream that just there's yoga studios, massage parlors. There's rage rooms that are in some places, but like similar to that, but like studios where we could just go and feel, help have people help us feel just what are we feeling, whether it's anger, sadness. We are just, so many of us are walking zombies, faking aliveness because we don't know how to express through us what's really happening.
Ugh, Brian, listen, if you guys come back to LA and you want to open that studio, I am in. Absolutely. I totally agree. And one of the things that you're pointing to is, again, this like you guys weren't taught how to be men in a way that I don't think anyone sits down and teaches women how to be women. But I do think that there's a lot more cultural acceptance for our exploration of what it means to be a woman. And you talk about the masculine and the feminine, right? And I think that this expression of masculine energy or the like rage is like, it's the one emotion that you guys were given the go ahead for. But there's so much more to being a man, right? And you talk about what it is to have power as a man, right? In a way that, as you say, is constructive, not destructive, because power can be, it can be destructive. But it is that the masculine energy of that power that can actually be comforting and protective and almost allow for the softness of a woman, of the feminine.
Yeah. Yes? I think a man is in his mastery as a human, as a man, when he is able to be in his power, to connect to power in ways that are attuned to the world around him. Power is destructive when it's not attuned to its impact. When I'm just expressing it because I got to express it and I don't really, I don't care. I'm not paying attention to how it's being received, to the impact on the other side, whether it's hurting the environment. In fact, when I do this work with men, one of the instructions I give them is that however you express your anger, do not hurt the environment. Be mindful. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt anyone else. And don't hurt the environment. Right? Those are like three basic rules, right? And that's teaching. So again, that's an interesting inquiry. How do I be in my anger in a way that doesn't hurt the world around me, doesn't hurt myself, and doesn't hurt another person? Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting dance to do. And a lot of men are we still have a lot of anger at our fathers, anger at our mothers. The world is still rife with anger at women, femicide.
You don't say.
Femicide is a thing that happens. Yeah, a friend of mine is living in Italy right now, and he's sharing with me that femicide is a real thing happening in Italy. It's happening in South America.
It happens everywhere. In Italy, there's actually a name for it. We don't call it femicide when we kill women. It's just another murder.
Right.
We actually don't even name it. At least other countries name it for what it is.
Fair enough. Indeed.
Yeah.
And this anger towards women. And in our country, we do have terminologies like incels, the involuntary celibate. These young men who are in many ways, again, expressing a lot of anger towards women. You have the Andrew Tate sphere of things. Again, there's so much anger at women. Anger. So men, there's so much anger. And one of the things that I think is so vitally important for us to do is to learn how to be with our anger. For example, a lot of men were raised by parents who weren't there for them in all kinds of ways, or were abusive in all kinds of ways. And a lot of men, what we'll do is we'll make excuses for them. They were doing the best they could. I had a man close to me whose father used fear and intimidation to control him as a teenager, and including physical abuse. And I remember talking to him about that. And he said, "It's fine. My father beat me, but I probably deserved it. Keep me in line," kind of thing. And I remember, and this is a man who, by the way, was an alcoholic and a rage-aholic for much of his adult life. And so, and not making the connection, right, between the way he was treated by his father and the way that he then expresses himself in the world through numbing and drowning with alcohol and raging outwards at all these other directions. And one of the things that I really enjoy working with men is, how do we allow ourselves to feel the anger at our father without also condemning him? Right? Yeah, okay, he did the best he could. And you know what? We can be angry. He did the best he could, and he fucked up. Doesn't make him a bad person. It doesn't make him evil. It doesn't make us bad sons for allowing ourselves to be angry. But can we be angry and still respectful? This is the line that I love to figure out how to dance with men, because that transfers over then into our intimate relationships, right? How do we get to be who we are in ways that aren't disempowering? There we go, that word, disempowering, to our spouses, to women. I think this is a dance that few men know how to do. We're either the dominant conqueror or the tyrant overlord in a dynamic, or we're the impotent, weak, Mr. Nice Guy.
And there's a lot of this duality and binaries of these, right? Like, my father is either an asshole or he's, everything was fine. I'm either rageful or I'm a pussy, whatever these binaries are. And what I hear in your work and what I know of you is that you're asking men to lean into the yes and, to the gray areas that, like, I have pain and my father hurt me, and also I love him, and that's okay. We don't allow a lot of space for that in the masculine today with men.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Primis Bank. If you've listened to recent episodes, then you've heard me talk about how important it is to establish a new checking account separate from your spouse. And you've also heard me talk about Primis Bank and all the wonderful resources they've put together for people going through a separation or divorce. Well, there's another fee-free account that they have that gives you more earning potential than most banks' high-yield savings accounts. That's right. Primis Premium Checking comes with one of the nation's highest rates, currently a 5.07 annual percentage yield. And all it takes is a dollar to open. So let me say that again, 5.07%. Just like Primis Perks, every Primis Premium account comes with free ATM use nationwide, no overdraft fees. It has early paycheck deposit, plus there is no account maximum, and they'll never cap your interest earnings. Whether you've heard of Primis before or the name is new to you, you should take a look. They are not like your typical online bank. They're a member FDIC, and they have real 24/7 customer service. Plus, the extra work they're doing for their customers, like what they've put together for people who are going through a divorce, is anything but typical. Head on over to primisbank.com/DSG to view more details on Primis Premium Checking, and also their other divorce resources like guides, blogs, and so much more. So that is Primis, PRIMIS.com/DSG to take advantage for more resources and to start opening an account today. It really only takes a few minutes. And now back to our show.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
We either want men to be total pussycats and just calm and quiet and behave yourself, or we expect them to be angry tyrant overlords. Again, there is the, it's like we either want to neuter men altogether, or we expect them to, it's happening in our political arena right now. It's like the most popular politicians are the ones that kind of are the angriest and have the most virulent things to say. Again, how is that helpful to us? The Mr. Nice Guy and the Dominant Tyrant, like those two poles are not, they're not the lead. They're not the men we need. We need men that are integrated. I teach this in, when I do relational work with men, one of the distinctions that we talk about is this paradox. Teaching men how to both care about your partner, what's happening for, we'll just say her in this case, how to care about your partner and simultaneously not care. I can unpack that a little bit, because most men, again, we get caught in the dichotomy, the polarity, the extreme polarity of either all I do is care, and so I try so hard to make you happy, so hard. I won't have boundaries. I won't tell you the truth about what's really going on for me. I won't say no when it's really a no. Right? I'll manipulate, lie, do all, again, that's often the Mr. Nice Guy, who's very manipulative, right? I'll just do whatever I think you want me to. That because I care so much about what you think and what's happening for you, which that never, makes it's not real. I'm offering a facade. I'm offering a pretend version of myself with the intention of maintaining belonging. It's very understandable. It's all childhood wounding coming through the adult in order to create belonging, to not be exiled, to not be rejected. And so that's the one who just cares and cares. And then on the other side, though, and often that if a man starts out there, he often then, when that doesn't work and doesn't get his way and his partner still isn't happy, or he'll explode over into the, I don't give a fuck tyrant. I don't care. Fuck off. Fuck you. Fuck your feelings. I don't give a shit about any of this. This sucks. You suck. Everything sucks. Whatever. Right. It's like,
yes.
Damned if I do, damned if I don't. Damned if I care, damned if I don't care.
And when I see like the nice guy men who are not in their authentic selves, I always feel that undercurrent of rage within their niceness. There's this little current that you can feel.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. The way I often explain the Mr. Nice Guy thing is like when she or anyone, I can experience it when I'm in the presence of a guy who's in his nice guy act. It's like I can put my arm right through him. Like energetically, I can right through him. Like I can't feel his spine. I can't feel, where are you? And I know where you are by your boundaries, by what you say no to, by the ways you tell me to back off if I'm starting to encroach on your space, by the way you take up space in the room. And we take up space by having wants, having desires, having needs, having thoughts, having wanting to participate, etc. And that not caring and caring. Wow. Now we're starting to do a really interesting dance, right? It's notice I'm not saying give up either. I'm saying do both. How do you care, stay in your caring, and simultaneously hold on to the part of you that also doesn't care? Because that's the part of you that's going to be able to speak your truth, to be honest about what's happening for you on the inside, be vulnerable, be real, be just say the things that I need to say. And though the part of me that cares is going to figure out how do I also do that in a way that has positive impact, or at least another way I say it is honesty without kindness is often cruel, right? But kindness without honesty is manipulation. But honesty with kindness is divine. And that's that practice, caring and not caring. It's like, how do I be honest and kind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so well said. I love that. I love that. And that it's the not losing yourself entirely in the relationship while also you're holding, I think, knowing yourself. We've got to know who we are to be in relationship. Otherwise, we do melt into it and then we don't know where we are. There is no spine. There is no self. Maintaining a self while also continuing to serve the relationship by choosing the relationship.
It is interesting. When I met my wife, I met her, I was 41. I'm 49 now, so a little over 8 years ago. And I had a pretty strong sense of self by this time. And in earlier relationships, when I didn't really know who I was, I didn't really know what my boundaries were. I didn't really know what do I really stand for? What's really a yes for me? And what's really a no for me? What am I here on this earth to do? A lot of those kinds of questions. Yeah, my relationships were a mess. They were disasters. Now, I met my wife at 41. I'd done a lot of that inner growth work, a lot of connecting to myself, a lot of finding myself, all of that. And though, all the same, she broke up with me 4 months into our relationship because we were running into stuff that I couldn't do that work as a single person. There's also a relational discovery. I'm not the same person today that my wife met 8-9 years ago. And in large part, I'm not the same person because of her presence.
Sure. She's, because you grow together, you become a couple. You talk about in your book also like having a purpose together that does transform you.
Yes.
You're not just Brian, you're Brian, but you're also Brian and Sylvie.
We're Brilvie.
We're bro.
I think that's what they call it. Or Sylvian. I don't know. Sometimes she wants to go first. So we're Sylvian.
I love it.
But Brilvy's easier. Sylvian is a little harder, but it's fine. The sacrifices we make, we're Sylvian.
That's right. That's right. But you grow together.
That's the idea, or that's the hope, I think. There is a growing together. There's also a, look, I've grown in many ways. I didn't want to grow in a lot of the ways I've had to grow in order for the relationship to succeed. And that's not a problem. I think that's a necessity. I think that we don't get to stay the same person that we were when we enter a relationship. Look, maybe if you meet someone in your 60s or 70s, or maybe even in your 50s, right? There's so much of that, brain and personality and all the things, and people are like, well, I'm just am who I am. Okay, fine. That's fine. That's fine. But if you're going to spend decades with somebody.
I've encountered that with my clients, where I have clients who say we work on values a lot in my work. And because I think if you're trying to decide whether to stay or go, a good place to start is, okay, what are your values? And let's look at, is there an alignment? That's just one of the pieces we look at. And I have clients who have clearly had strong values around personal development. Obviously, they're working with me. They listen to all the podcasts. They read all the books. And their husbands will be like, you knew who I was when you married me. I haven't changed in 20 years.
Right.
And they're like, right. Yeah. Well, that is not how you be in relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not an ideal to strive for. That you're just telling me basically you're 49, but actually you're only 29 psychologically. I don't want to be with a 29-year-old when I'm 50 anymore.
That's
I want to be
right.
with a psychologically 50-year-old who's someone who's growing with me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Let's talk about the man divided. And this feels like the core of the choosing her every day or leave her, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what that?
Yeah.
I think so many women experience this, and I don't know that they've named it. In the way you have.
So that chapter is A Man Divided. It's called A Man Divided Causes Stress in His Partner. And that's something that, again, I was so ignorant of myself for so many years. And even as I was playing at relationship in so many ways, saying I'm in, making the actions like I'm all in, but there was a part of me that was also out seeking something else. Wondering if there might be another woman who could love me better, make me feel more free, more whatever. Or if even in my case, I didn't have a set career in my 20s or 30s. So there was a part of me that was also trying to figure out what the hell am I supposed to do with my life? And that part of me also was venturing outwards. I think a lot of men in particular, when they're struggling with deeper purpose. Why am I here? What am I really supposed to be doing when they're maybe doing work that doesn't light them up, that they don't feel excited about? I think that also that division can also be felt by their intimate partners and can get in the way. But that a man divided causes stress in his partner, because in that division, in that internal confusion, one of the great epiphanies that I had in when I was studying the masculine feminine work and learning from David Data, that the women that I was partnering with, who were always more feminine in their core, the question that they were hearing everything through was, what does this mean for our connection? What does this mean for our connection? Brian is wondering if he should take this job and manage this band that's going to take him on the road and he'll be away for months. And I look like I'm lit up about it. And over here, she's struggling in her own way to support it because what does that mean for our connection? Just as an example, I remember once myself supporting a girlfriend who was contemplating on taking a job overseas to teach English in Japan. And she would have been gone for a year. And see, the thing is, I was internally divided. A part of me was hoping she would go so that I wouldn't have to decide whether to stay in this relationship. And I remember being probably overly supportive of her taking this job. wanting to, on one part, wanting to be a supportive boyfriend, rooting her on no matter what. Baby, go do your thing. That sounds so exciting. Oh my God, I'm such a fan. Yes, it's a great opportunity for you. She was struggling with money at the time. I was in my 20s. We were young. She was struggling with money. Yes, that's so amazing. Go do it. And I remember her being really hurt by my support. And I remember thinking, why would you be hurt? Doesn't every woman want a guy who just supports her in this way? And see, what I was doing was on the other side of that was I was the question that a lot of more masculine, core, focused, oriented people will, the question we're living with is, what does this mean for my freedom? And so for me, oh man, going to Japan, being free. And I was in the military at the time. So I talk about, I felt trapped. It's almost like I was living freedom through her. Baby, please go do this so I get to feel some freedom. It's not being ignorant of these kinds of things just created so much havoc in my relationships. And again, so choose her every day or leave her. A lot of the work that I do with men is helping them get off the damn fence. I've worked with a man not long ago who was on the fence for 10 years, in and out of a relationship for 10 years. And it was really profound to see, to work with him and helping him get off the damn fence. I didn't say those words to him. That's not how I work. But through our coaching work together, to see him wobble a little bit and realize, like, he knows he can't continue. He can't keep going like this. And he actually chose to go all in on the relationship, and they're flying. He's doing fantastic. He even feels more free now that he's made this choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting.
You do talk about that, right? That it's like our bids for connection when one person, and I think that there is that masculine freedom thing, and we're women by and large are the ones who are bidding for connection. But when we're being met with this one foot in, one foot out, we get more and more needy, clingy, all the things, right?
Yeah.
That push you further away, right? But, and you talk about how, like, if men lean into women's need for connectivity and women lean into men's need for freedom, we each get what we're looking for from the relationship. And I'm less needy and clingy, and so therefore you're more free.
Totally. And it can be really frightening to do that because, so for example, for my part, leaning into giving my wife the connection that she yearns for at times can be terrifying because it feels like I'm giving up freedom in the moment. It could be as simple as she's having an emotional response to something and I'm feeling trapped by her emotional response. I'm wanting to solve the problem. Why? You know, fix it, solve it. Why? Because once it's fixed, I'm free of it. We don't have to worry about it anymore. We're free of it. We're free of the constraints created by whatever problem I think she's imagining. And to not give into that temptation, but rather meet her with connection practice, which can be like embracing her feelings, using language to be reassuring and compassionate and empathic. Something, by the way, none of my fathers ever taught me how to do. None of their fathers ever taught them how to do. None of my forefathers, we weren't set up to succeed in this domain. So I have great compassion for men, especially in this domain, because we've been set up to fail. That said, we can learn. And these are some of the things that I teach, and also that I'm still learning myself. It's challenging for me too, as well, to lean in and be and do connection practice with her rather than give in to my freedom impulse. She doesn't want to be freed from whatever I think she needs to be freed from in the moment. She just wants to feel my presence, to connect, to feel that I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm in this with you. She's not alone in this. That then often will help her relax. And now she feels more free, and vice versa. She using freedom language with me and to remind me that she's not trying to control me, not trying to tell me what to do, that I get to make my own choices. Like, that can be scary for her too, because what if I make choices that threaten our connection, which I might. And it's a fairly simple dance, but just not an easy one.
No, it's deeply complicated by just the simple fact that what we desire tends to be in conflict, right? Although not, because really what we all want is that connection, but we also want it in different ways.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
You have another chapter that you said it's called Women Feel Unsafe. What do you call it? Women Feel Unsafe and it's our fault.
And it is our fault. Women feel unsafe and yep, it's our fault.
I was just talking to somebody else and I was thinking about the way you describe this really powerful image of being at a workshop with 2,000 people, 1,000 women, 1,000 men, and the workshop leaders asking the men, how many of you have felt unsafe in the last week? And like, what, five men raise their hands?
Go up. Yep.
And you ask the women, and it's every single one of us.
And some women raised both hands. Yeah. Yeah. That was a revelation for me. Even again, growing up with three sisters and two moms and getting insight into what women go through, it just wasn't something I'd ever thought about. And few men ever think about. Few men just look at themselves and think, I'm not a danger. I'm not dangerous in the ways that I think of danger, which is typically physically. I'm not gonna hit my wife, or I'm not gonna hit my spouse or my girlfriend. So what has she got to feel unsafe about? Nothing. And the tragedy, the disconnect that unfolds inside of that ignorance is, again, it is tragic. And I myself was susceptible to it for a long time. I remember a woman that I worked with very briefly. I remember her sharing that the only place she ever felt, and she was sharing this through tears. I did one session with her and her husband. She said, the only place I ever feel safe is at nighttime when I'm in his arms. And the thing is, Kate, her husband was abusive towards her. That's why I didn't keep working with them. You know, I don't work with couples where abuse is happening. But that she's partnered with an abusive man, and still that's the only place in the world that she ever feels safe. My goodness, it's heartbreaking. And I call out that it is our men's fault. There's this beautiful idea in psychology, and I first learned of this in the book, King Warrior, Magician, Lover, about the journey from adolescent archetypes, masculine archetypes, to adult, mature archetypes, psychological archetypes. But here's the idea. Adults take responsibility even for that which we are not responsible. I love that. That was a revelation to me as well. Adults take responsibility even for that which we are not responsible.
So what does that look like? Say more. Can you say more about that?
So a lot of men struggle in relationships. Their partners come in having been hurt by fathers, abandoned by fathers. I'm working with a man right now whose partner was essentially cheated on by every man that ever came before him. And he's trying to hold himself to a standard of perfection that is unachievable. And one of the challenges that happens in these dynamics is men are like, I didn't do this to you. Stop blaming me. Stop treating me as if I'm the one who did this to you. And they're not wrong about that. They're not wrong. That's not helpful. And there's certainly a responsibility. And obviously this goes both ways, by the way. I'm just speaking from the perspective of the male view. There's certainly a role for each partner to not project past wounds onto current partners. But we also have to accept that, you know what? I am inheriting all of the past traumas and betrayals that my spouse, my partner, my girlfriend is bringing in. Even though it's not my fault, I am responsible now for helping her carry those, for helping her heal those, for helping her confront, do whatever needs to be done. And to just say, I didn't do it, so don't bring that shit to me. That's adolescent psychology. It's not
going to actually forward the relationship in any way, shape, or form.
It's just going to create more distrust and disconnection.
Right? I like that. I love that idea that when you're committing to another person, you are committing to them and their wounding. And right? And there's a balance between it's my job to heal you and it's your job to go to therapy and figure your stuff out. And it's our job to work together to figure out what that looks like within the relationship. It's not my job to heal. It is not my job to heal your wounding, but I am responsible for having a place in this relationship for the healing of your wounds and my wounds to take place.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm not your therapist or your coach, but I am your partner in working with what is here. There's this beautiful saying from the world of the work of ecology. Everything in the forest is the forest. Everything in the forest is the forest. And that's such a beautiful and profound idea. And in relationships, everything in the relationship is the relationship. What a lot of us want to do is we want to exile the parts that we don't like from the relationship. I don't want to get that stuff out of here. Don't bring that to me. It's, you know, la la la, I close my ears and or close my, oh, I can't hear you. I can't do those. Yeah, there you go. It's very childish in a way. Yeah. It's understandable. Uh-huh. We just don't know any better. But everything in the relationship is the relationship. And that is, oh my goodness. Again,
that's beautiful. And how beautiful, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. There's also this, I'm on a quote streak right now.
Yeah, I love it. Keep going.
Have you ever read the book or parts of it, Women Who Run With the Wolves?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I read that book when I was, I think, a teenager, maybe in college.
Okay. So and when it was all the rage.
Yeah, in the late 80s, early 90s. And I was like, oh, my God. And then, wait, this is funny. So I am actually in a Facebook group with her.
Oh.
So it's she podcasts, right? Women's podcast group. And she posted looking for something one day. And I was literally like,
yeah, you fangirled out.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I understand. Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Yeah. That book is a masterpiece. I say it's recommended reading, required reading for every man and woman that wants to live a good life. But there's this one thing, there's this one line in the chapter called Skeleton Woman, which is one of my favorite. And again, I think it's very instructive around what happens in relationships. But this line, she says, to love pleasure takes little. To love truly takes a hero that can manage his own fear. And I think this is so profound, and because what does come up in relationships first is often fear. Once we get past the rosy honeymoon period, which doesn't usually last years, if you're lucky, it lasts a few months. If you're telling the truth to each other, it lasts a couple weeks. But the first thing that will often arise is, oh my God, what am I taking on here in this person? That the dream we're sold is, oh my God, they're going to meet all my needs and all my desires and my fantasies, and this is going to be the best thing ever. Oh my God, they just check all the boxes and feel butterflies and rainbows and unicorns. And it's like that for a few weeks, maybe a few months, and then something happens, or a tone of voice emerges, or some misunderstanding arises, and all of a sudden, fear arises. Oh my God, what am I saying yes to? What am I? If we don't know how to manage that fear and be with that fear, then we won't succeed in the relationship. We'll either shut down and calcify around it and just hold on for dear life. And we may stay for that, like that, for years. I'm sure you've worked with people. I have worked with people that have been doing this for decades, right? Or we'll act out the fear and push love away because, oh my God, there's no way I can take on like the wounding or whatever it is going on for this person. Too much for me. No thanks. I don't want any drama. I'm out.
Yep. Oh, there's the drama. Mm-hmm.
There's that one.
Yeah. No drama. Ooh, can't swipe left fast enough on those.
Wisely so.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Brian, this is such an amazing conversation. And I guess I want you to, if you would, leave us with, how do we call more men in to this kind of work? Because I believe it's in my book. I truly believe that the future of our species and of our planet really depends on it. And because as you said, the more we act out of rage and all of those sort of hard, quote, masculine things that we've been taught, that we're in so much trouble. And so you see this spreading in a way that, like, where we can call men into this work without threatening.
That's just it. It won't happen by badgering men into it, by shaming, blaming, obligating. That doesn't help. All that does is actually cause men to retreat further into our don't tread on me, don't tell me what to do silliness. And I get it. I am that man too. And we see this again in our politics. So men are so polarized because each feels the other side is telling me what to do and I'm not going to do it and I'm not going to take it anymore. And violence is potentially the inevitable result or potentially the result. And so that does not. Terry Real says something that I think we should all really take to heart. Harshness never works. Harshness never works. But what also doesn't work is coddling men, is enabling us to get away with bad behavior, with adolescent behavior, to get away with not caring about our impact. That doesn't help us either. Not being held accountable to the impact of our actions and our behavior and our words. What can women do is keep doing your personal growth work. Keep empowering yourself. So healing that original wound that so many women experience of disempowerment. Continue to do the work of empowering yourself, whatever that looks like for you, so that in the presence of a man, you can hold him to a standard that is worthy of you. You can have boundaries. You can say no and let him be in the discomfort of your no, right? Let him be in the discomfort of you having boundaries. Let him rise to the challenge of being worthy of your heart. Not all men will want to make that choice. Not all men will choose to rise. We'll let that man go. Let that man's better off not partnered with a woman. And I say, if he doesn't want to rise to the challenges of love, let him go.
And let him. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Brian, thank you so much for this conversation. It's really beautiful. Tell us, tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, thank you. My book, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, you can find that on Amazon. It's on Audible as well. I narrated it You can, but one-stop shopping for all my blogs and videos and courses and my story, all of that is just my website, Brian. It's Brian with a Y. It's very important. BrianReeves.com.
And all of that will be in the show notes, of course. And definitely follow Brian on Instagram because you post really great content. So
I'm glad we did this. Finally.
Me too. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.